everyone. Welcome back to Rewatchable. This is episode 142. We're into our Buffy the Vampire Slayer rewatch, and we're up to season 1, episode 7, Angel, and number 8, I, Robot, You, Jane. You may have noticed that it's me, Natalie, back hosting. I was one of your hosts for Avatar and Legend of Korra, and I am not a host for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I am just a mere superfan contributor. Unfortunately, both of our hosts are otherwise occupied this week. Karen is away at Disneyland, and Selena is away not touching the internet this week. So she might be off in a forest. I'm not sure she does things like that. But I'm filling in for them to host this episode, and everyone else with me is a newbie this week, so it's going to be an interesting experience, though Mitch kind of has a weird double up in season one, yeah, which we'll might have talked about already. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us to give feedback about this episode or, you know, anything coming forward that you're excited for, but no spoilers for the newbies, please, you can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable, or you can comment on this post on hyperball.com, or you can join us on our Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can get in touch with us on any of those places and, you know, tell us how you're feeling about Buffy so far. So we've got Mitch, Kristen, Brittany, all newbies. I'm a super fan, and we're going to do our fun facts. So in case you don't know our voices off by heart yet. So who wants to go first? Mitch, do you want to go first? Say your name.
Sure. So you're going to notice when you're reading some of the stock that I have Tomb Raider on the mind, it's because I'm playing the new one, and I find this absolutely hilarious. You're able to, like, she's not overtly sexy in this game. They kind of took that and threw it out the window to make her more like Indiana Jones, I guess.
Yeah.
But you can make her dress up in kind of like one of her classic kind of like cami tops or whatnot, something that's very unfit for journeying. And right now I'm in like Siberia in a snowstorm, and I find it really amusing to like do a swan dive into a giant lake in the freezing cold water. And she's like, oh, it's cold. And I'm like,
yeah, no shit, Lara.
Shouldn't have worn that cami then, huh?
Very good. Who wants to go next? Kristen, do you want to say your name for the nice people?
Surely. Hi, I'm Kristen. And my embarrassing fact, fun fact, sure, was that I spent last night watching Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2.
Like Fire and Rain. Oh, please.
I just needed some like ridiculous Disney fan fun last night. And I was cruising through Netflix and it just kind of jumped out at me. And I was like, oh my God, these are going to be awful. I need to watch this. And they're awesome. I watched them back in the day, but they're good fun. So,
and now Nick and Demi are on tour. It just all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I know about those movies is someone makes a birdhouse.
Yeah, Kevin does.
That's awesome. A fact, right?
Yeah.
It used to be my friend's screen name. I've never seen them. I don't hate the Jonas Brothers, especially Nick. I quite like him. And Joe. I actually have like a solid amount of appreciation for like the Jonas Brothers and what they do. I really liked the
like just
essay.
Tell all that we love. Yeah.
The essay that Joe wrote for, like, Variety, I think, about, like, the issues when they started. And, like, I really love Nick, like, as an artist. So go to Jonas. But I have not seen Camp Rock.
Yeah, no, they're ridiculous. I mean, the movies are absolutely silly, but they're good fun, so.
Cool. Brittany.
Hi. What's going on?
Hi. Say your name. I mean, I just said it, but you should say it.
I'm Brittany. My fun fact is that I bought my first lottery ticket today because the Powerball is $800 million.
I've heard about this.
$900 million.
That's crazy. I don't understand. That's crazy. Is it all going to go to one person, or is it like if six people put the same numbers, they split it?
I don't know how the lottery works. I had to figure out how to buy a ticket today.
I've seen it split before, yeah, Natalie. A lot of people get the same numbers because at this point it's so like popularized that it's a thing to go out and buy the lottery ticket. So there are bound to be like eight winners when it gets up this high almost every time. And almost defeats the purpose of it being so high because it's just whatever. Who cares at that point? But I guess
if you win, Brittany, you should give me $1 million.
Okay.
Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, and me.
Everyone at Hyperball gets $1 million.
You know, you can give
and then I can come visit you all the time. Yes.
And you wouldn't even feel it. Like
us bartering money for that doesn't exist. Fabulous.
And like not even bartering, just being like, no, you should give me $1 million.
Just begging.
Oh
just
my God.
Begging.
Brittany, if you win the Powerball, can you buy us a table at Miscast?
Sure.
Cool. That's like my number one thing. It's like the number one thing I would do if I had like a lot of money. I would be like, table at Miscast is literally number one on my list, which is...
I'm not familiar with Miscast as a podcasting con.
No. It's a Broadway.
Oh, wait. No. This is, Natalie, this is where you or Brittany did your... I get now. I'm out of context. I get it now. We're like people who sing songs about roles that they would never be in. Yes! Like Jonathan Groff did. Yes! Didn't he do? Was he singing "Don't Rain on My Parade"? Who was?
I think he's done "Don't Rain on My Parade."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about now. But doesn't it sound like it? Kind of sounds like a podcasting con to me. Just because we're in a podcasting vibe. Whatever. I get it now.
No, good for you, Mitch. Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's a benefit, a Broadway benefit, where people sing roles that they, you know, would never actually get to do on stage. So I'm going to predict that the 2016 miscast is going to be all white people singing Hamilton. That's not my fun fact, though. I could just go Broadway nerd fun fact, which would only be for Brittany. But my fun fact is that I embarrassed myself on Twitter again. My name is Natalie, and I am the worst at Twitter. And I very thirstily tweeted at Mark Hamill, a.k.a. Luke Skywalker, because he posted a picture of himself at home from when they were going to the Star Wars premiere. And I found it very attractive, and I may have used the word yowza. And about 15 minutes later, he favorited it. And I really thought that Mark Hamill was too famous to see individual tweets and favorite them. But that happened, and now...
Is he in his 60s?
Yeah, so... Have you seen this photo? He's fucking hot. Like, yeah, he definitely is in good shape currently, and he looked great, and he's exactly my taste in men, and that happened, and I've never interacted with Mark Hamill in any way before, and I'm so glad that was the first time. It was great. And, yeah, that's me. We'll move on to the actual episode now, shall we? So episode 7 is Angel. You know, this is about another old hot guy, so it's topical. in this episode, it's revealed that Angel is a vampire, and like, duh, did anyone ever suspect anything else? So there are three bad guys, and the master seems to be stretching himself purposely thin because he has Darla stake them after they get roughed up a bit by Bangel. I'm going to go ahead and assume that that's the ship name. You're not wrong. It's pretty close to that, I think. Buffy has Angel stay the night, but the two save the honky-tonky until after school the next day. Angel is a vampire with a soul, Buffy is conflicted, and Darla sees an opportunity to formulate a most nefarious plan. Darla sets up Angel to seem like he was the one that attacked Joyce, and Buffy takes the bait. In an epic climax, Buffy confronts Angel at the recently fumigated The Bronze. Darla Lara Crofts her way onto the scene with two handguns, wounding our broody vampire and pinning down the Slayer. The rest of the Scooby gang distracts Darla for long enough to stake the bitch, proving his loyalty to the light side. And Mitch has spelt gang like gang from Avatar because he can't let go of the past. So...
He really can't.
Well, it's really because Brittany didn't get the fact that the A's were meant to be two A's.
Yeah, have you never gotten that before,
no,
Brittany?
No, I figured it out, like, you know, by the last episode of Avatar. Yeah,
so then from there on out, you had to keep on putting the second A capitalized to show it was like, you know, it was the A was put in there on purpose. So now I can't write the Scooby gang without making another A, making it capitalized. It's just, it's force of habit.
Yeah, because I asked, like, towards the end, I was like, why is everyone misspelling the word gang every time we write this?
I love you so much. It's like to a degree that is creepy. I am so obsessed with you. Okay. One thing that Mitch hasn't put on this list because it's the main big question, basically, is...
Classic, Mitch.
Oh, thanks.
Is...
It's the Avatar. Here we go.
Who knew Angel was a vampire? Tell me about whether you thought it was obvious. Tell me about whether you knew it was coming, anything like that. Like, obviously, to me, it didn't even occur to me till recently that people didn't know he was a vampire because, you know, it's so pop culture osmosis. You know, everything about Buffy, I feel like, is known to a lot of people. And I didn't realize, you know, how clearly the show kind of avoids specifically telling you that for however long it is, 7 episodes. And so, yeah, just want to see who knew, how you knew, and, you know, whether you thought it was a shocking reveal. So, Kristen, do you want to go first with that?
Sure. Surely. Yeah, I knew that Angel was a vampire. I also knew that he was a vampire with a soul, and that that somehow meant something different to Buffy's verse rather than some of the other vampire verses. Like, I don't know much about Buffy. Like, there are a lot of details that people know. I've managed to, like, steer clear of the spoilers, but that's one that I just picked up possibly from Selena back when we did Vampire Hype, because she would, you know, she'd make comparisons.
Comparing mythology and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So she may have mentioned it in conversation then, but I've also gone to some Joss Whedon panels where people talk about Buffy and stuff like that. So I picked it up somewhere, and it was just a thing I knew. So, yeah, I wasn't shocked. But I would be surprised if people didn't suspect Angel was a vampire from the beginning, because, A, this is a show about a vampire hunter, and what is more conflicting than her, like, finding a vampire hot? And, two, he only ever sees her at night. Like, he doesn't come out during the day. He doesn't go to school. So, it, you know, it kind of makes sense.
I suppose that's true. Mitch, you knew, obviously, yeah, seen the season before.
Well, not even, I wasn't even surprised watching it for the first time. As I said, kind of to our group, I remember, I think it was two episodes ago now, that I was just kind of like, Angel's a vampire, and then I can't remember who, like, Selena was just like, Mitch, and I was like, they have it in the show. Like, she does this acrobatic, like, handstand right above him, which she sees in the alleyway, as opposed to just, like, why is she hiding from him? It was just all weird to me. And then also, I think just simply from the fact that he has his own TV show, you can't not know anything about a given TV show, period. And I think that I at least just absorbed the fact that there was a TV show about a vampire that was originally from Buffy. It was, like, a spinoff. And that was not a big deal to me. So, like, I didn't feel spoiled, I think, innately knowing that either. So it's not to say that it's defensible that I said it, because I should have known that there was a difference. But regardless, even I don't even know, even back when I learned this via osmosis, if it was ever even a shocking thing. He kind of has like a vampire look. It's the brooding face. It's the spiked up hair. It's the hollowed out cheekbones. It's the leather 90s, jacket. All of it just sells like vampire. That,
I suppose. I don't know. I can't remember. Like, I can't remember my origin story with Angel about whether I knew or didn't know. Like, I definitely didn't start watching Buffy from, like, brand new on television. Like, it would have been a couple of years after it started airing, you know, getting the videos and stuff. But I don't know. I'm just experiencing an amount of love for Angel on this rewatch that I have never experienced in however long it is since I've been watching Buffy 10, 15 years. And I just am obsessed with him, but I cannot remember whether there was a... whether I knew he was a vampire or not, you know, I think I always did. But Brittany, how about you? Give me something good here.
Oh, you know I'm always good for this. I did not know that he was a vampire. I also didn't know that Angel, before we started this, had his own TV show. So there you go. There's Fair that enough. Fun fact. So
don't you remember, like, the whole thing that Selena did that EW stole the idea of? That was, like, the best moments of the TV show Angel.
No, don't remember that.
She doesn't pay attention to stuff that she doesn't, like, know anything about.
I really don't. But I got all these messages from Karen and, like, because I edited that episode, Mitch, and they were like, you have to cut out Mitch's spoiler. And I was like, okay. And I cut out this whole segment that apparently was not the spoiler. Because I thought it was something else. And I was like, oh, well, I'll just cut this section out because it sounds spoilery. Maybe because they were talking about werewolves. So I'm like, oh, it must be that Angel's a werewolf. Sure. And so I cut that section out. And then I got a message on Twitter that was like, you know, Mitch spoiled that what Angel is. And I was like, no, I don't, because clearly I still didn't hear it when I re-listened to the episode.
So the episode actually went out with the spoiler in it.
It went out with the spoiler in it, even though I thought I cut it out.
Oh, well.
And I also clearly did not catch that either in the episode.
There are I'm assuming, I don't know. I do know some others that I've sworn to Karen that I will keep to myself, that I could have done worse. I really could have. So I'm not trying to defend
you
it. But I'm also saying that there are ones that I was done away with.
Yeah,
I was
definitely could have done worse, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it could. So I'm just happy that at least this was a spoiler. At least, if anything, anything. It happened early on. We're over it. Like, we found it out in this episode. We can all breathe, take a breath, put away the pitchforks and the torches.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay, so Brittany didn't know Angel was a vampire, so how did that feel for you when that happened?
You know, it was kind of the same thing where Zuko finding out he had a scar instead of face paint. It was like, oh, that's a thing. It wasn't, like, shocking or anything. I was like, I guess this makes sense. And, like, Kristen was saying, the whole, like, he only comes out at night, and he's very brooding, and he wears a leather jacket, and he's like, you know, I guess that makes sense. He's been around the block a couple times.
He's a very pretty name. He must be a homosexual. I don't know.
This is going to be interesting. All right, so let's go to the actual plot of the episode. You know, Darla is basically begging to take out Buffy, you know, and the Master's like, no, don't do that. I'm going to send the three. And, you know, he sends these three, you know, militant big old vampires to go after Buffy. And, you know, she fights them and they lose and then they go back and their punishment is that the Master lets Darla, you know, kill them. So tactically, I mean, he just lost three fighters for failing instead of one fighter for failing, you know, if he'd let Darla do it. So I don't know, Mitch, why does this bother you so much?
It's just stupid. He has no ranks. He has no one else that he needs to impress, save for the chosen one or whatever we're calling that Harry Potter kid.
The anointed one.
It's just too Harry Potter. I'm sorry. Regardless, it's silly because he has just Darla at this point. Everyone else, Buffy's other stakes, I suppose, off screen, on screen, decided they didn't want to join in with him, like Angel or whatever. It's he has no one left. It's his own fault for killing them that then Darla gets killed, because what if he had all four of them go? I don't get it. It's just stupid. Like, gang up on her for once. They always seem to go at her one-on-one, and it's just no doubt you're going to die. Because, I mean, in the pilot, I think it was at least, it was part one or part two of the pilot, they had a bunch of vampires kind of coming along in the cemetery, and that was intimidating, and I really was scared for Buffy then. But now when it's just even these three and then Angel shows up, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not worried yet. And then he just, the Master, I should say, is just dumb for just getting rid of them. Like, well, you failed once. You must be incompetent, even though you've lived for thousands of years, assumedly, and killed many other people for me. So this one moment of weakness is it. You're gone.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, I don't try to understand, you know, what goes on in a 1,000-year-old vampire wrinkly man's brain. Do keep in mind that most vampires have never seen or fought a slayer. It's not like there's one in every town. There's one, and she's the new one, you know, she's the one that's there, and it means every vampire in every other city in every other town in the world has never seen or fought a slayer, so he is maybe being a bit harsh on them in terms of, like, coming up against an opponent, but I don't know. Anyway, they're dead. Darla is, you know, I think it's more to show that Darla is, like, kind of in a position of power. I think that's what this situation is meant to say, that Darla is kind of, you know, she's special, she's, you know, more respected, more powerful than these lackeys, basically. But anyway, more importantly, Angel gets naked in Buffy's bedroom. So, yeah, he gets wounded in this fight. They go home together. You know, he kind of, like, they sneak past Joyce and she kind of tries to fix him up in her bedroom. And he stays over the night and it's all very, you know, sweet. He's kind of very shy and ridiculous and not very Angel has, like, no game, which I love. But then the next day she kind of tells, you know, everyone all about it, like Willow and Xander and Giles, and Willow's like, ooh, and Xander is kind of like, ugh, that seems creepy and terrible. I want to talk about Xander in this. So you guys watching it for the first time, how do you guys feel about the way that Xander reacts to things like this? Kristen, go ahead.
For me, Xander just seems like the guy who likes a girl. And so anytime another guy looks like competition, they're going to act a bit like an ass. Like, it's just kind of a thing that happens on TV. Like, I'm used to seeing it, so it doesn't really shock me. I mean, I wish that he could just kind of, like, move past it and, you know, not act like such an idiot, but I basically am just yeah, it doesn't shock me that he acts the way he does.
And yeah, sorry, Brittany, you were saying something as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. It's kind of, he's responding the way I would expect anyone to respond in this type of situation on TV. Like, it's played off as comedy because Buffy is so unaware of what's going on, and he's, like, not shy about it. But then you have Willow watching him react like this to Buffy and getting all upset. And, you know, it's classic. Classic TV.
I'm personally just finding it, like, really bothers me. Like, after, you know, Xander, you know, you may or may not have got the impression, you know, after, you know... he's kind of renowned in, I guess, like, people's memory for Buffy as being like, oh, you know, nice guy, funny guy, like a soccer kind of, like, you know, character, that dynamic. But at the moment, he's really freaking getting to me because, like, even, like, everything he says doesn't seem, like, especially to Buffy, everything he says seems to have, like, all it is like, a motive for him. Like, when he's like, you know, oh... you know, can't be having this. You better stay at my house. We'll tell Angel to get out of town. It's like, and it's kind of, it's not a joke. Like, he's not, like, playing it off as a joke to her. He's like, here's the proper solution so I can be creepy about you, if you know what I mean. And he keeps pushing. Like, he does it several times. And maybe I'm taking it more seriously. I'm sure I'm taking it more seriously than the way that it was intended to be taken. But I kind of hate that that's, like, a thing that we write, basically, that people write, if you know what I mean. It's really every time he keeps pushing, like, about Angel, even when he's kind of keeps being like, you have to kill Angel, it's not because he thinks vampires are evil. It's because he likes Buffy, if you know what I mean. Like, that is his main motivation, and it's really bothering me. So, I don't know. It's I'm starting to get very angry at him, so we'll see. We also learn Angel's backstory, which is that he was a very, very ruthless, very vicious vampire, that Darla was the one who made him, basically. Like, she was his biter, you know, maker. And that he was cursed about 100 years ago by a Romani tribe because he killed a girl who was their, you know, little favorite girl. And he basically got cursed with a soul. So he still has all the impulses of a vampire, and he still needs to drink blood to survive, and he's still tempted by doing things, but he also has the conscience and the remorse of, I guess, a human being. Like, not to say that there aren't, like, terrible human beings in the world and this show as well, but you know, he has the conscience that demons in general lack, that give them no care about doing this kind of stuff. So he cares very much about doing this kind of stuff. So I don't know, Brittany, as someone not exposed to this at all, how did you feel about, like, that as kind of a plot device?
I don't know. I mean, I am not into any prior, like, vampire mythology before this. Like, I read the first three Twilight books, but then, like, when the vampire baby was trying to eat its way out, I kind of stopped. Never finished it. I don't know how this compares to every other type of vampire thing that's going on out in the world. So this is, you know, I think it was fine. You know, they're not really harping on what I appreciated, I should say, is that they're not really harping on the fact that, like, you know, they're hitting all the points of, like, what helps build this world and what makes it, like, what makes Angel different than the others because he has a soul, and, like, how can these people die? And yes, they do need blood to survive, without, like, stating it, like, you know, as a point of fact. So they're not like, in order to be a vampire, these are the three things that have to happen. Like, it's sort of like you have to pick it up as you're, like, you know, watching it. And I appreciate that, as opposed to, like, being sat down and told how things work, and just picking up on clues like that is really cool.
All right. Anyone else got any deep thoughts about Angel's backstory that we know so far? You know, him as a vampire, him having a soul, like, what that kind of means, or even any comparisons to kind of other vampire literature, given that you guys have watched a bit more than Brittany has? Kristen, any thoughts about this kind of situation, these good vampires, I guess?
Yeah. We made the comparison, I think it was last episode, of Angel and Stefan Salvatore. And after this whole thing, they have even more parallels, because Stefan has the awful murdery past, and he's trying really hard not to like fall back into that. And so it just kind of made me smile because I was like, yeah, like I can definitely see where Vampire Diaries may have taken some direction from Buffy, and that like just setting up the world and the characters and all that.
So the setup with Joyce, basically, you know, her whole plan, Darla's whole plan was, we love Angel, we want him back on our side, we want to turn him against, you know, make him stop liking this little Buffy girl and come back and be with us, you know, be back with us. We love you. You've got the potential to be the biggest, baddest guy around. Let's get him back. And Darla's grand plan is to make Buffy, you know, hate him and, you know, make them try and kill each other, basically. And they set up, you know, so that Joyce gets attacked and it makes it look like Angel did it. And I actually thought this was a very clever setup on Darla's part. I thought, oh, yeah, okay, this is pretty good. Like, I think this is actually pretty well done. Buffy's already in a moment of uncertainty. This is going to tip her over the edge. And yeah, but I'm like, this would be so easily solved if Angel was just like, I didn't do it, this is what happened, if you know what I mean. But does he do that? No, because he's a flop who doesn't know how to communicate. And I love him for that, but, you know, it means further troubles. So, Mitch, you kind of wrote, like, you know, shouldn't she have seen through Darla's obvious ploys? Do you mean Joyce herself, or do you mean Buffy? What did you mean with that?
You know, now you mention it, I also see how that could pertain to Buffy, but I meant it more for Joyce, because she, I don't think she's really that ditzy. I think they played her up to be worse in this scene. I mean, she does let Buffy go out to like a nightclub where they're served alcohol under AJ, assume, every night, and is like kind of okay with it. But then again, she's like, you can't have a boy in your room. So she's weird. She flip-flops to me. I'm not sure how I'm meant to believe Joyce interprets the world that she lives in and the vampires that are assumedly consistently stalking her, you know, being that she's the mother of the Slayer. And other than that, I love this tweet that we're going to read later on about, I think there was already a bit of discussion on Twitter about it, where it would be so much easier if there were cell phones. I disagree about the fact that it needed to be cell phones. I think that there needs to be more strong-willed writers, because these kind of setups where simple communication would have solved everything really torque me. They really do. Because even during the fight, in the end, Angel really could have just said, you caught me staring at blood. I can't help that carnal desire. But Darla set me up to do this, and you have to believe that from the fact that I could have killed you many times and I didn't. Why would I all of a sudden choose to do this? And I think that that's weak writing. I wish the writers would have taken a bigger leap and found the drama another way. It just didn't seem realistic to me that Buffy would buy into it.
I don't know. I mean, I really didn't see any point at which, you know, the setup wouldn't have worked. And I don't think that Joyce had any reason to suspect Darla. Like, yes, from a viewer, she's kind of like, thank you so much for letting me into your home. But, like, how much would you really suspect about a young girl coming to see your daughter if you knew nothing about vampires or anything at all? Like, why would you suspect anything at all?
And that's where I made that point talking about people being younger as vampires being a benefit, because I think that's the only thing that sells it for me here, that Darla is getting away with so much in her little, like, I suppose women's understand it's like a Catholic school girl's uniform or whatever. And that's an interesting plot point. I like the fact that we have young vampires and old vampires, and that makes a difference with what they're going to do in society as far as we've seen.
Yeah. Sorry, Brittany, I think you were saying something as well.
Oh, no, it was me.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. The only thing about the whole Joyce setup, I thought it was brilliant on Darla's part. The only thing that bugged me was that Joyce hears scary noises outside, and her solution is to open the front door. Like, nobody does that. As someone who has been alone in my house all week, like, when I hear scary noises, I shut doors. Like,
I don't know. I'd probably be like, what's going on? I'd probably get killed really fast.
Like, Karen, your protector. That's really cute.
Well, no, we just both usually hide from scary noises. No. That was the only part that kind of, you know, was weird to me. I was like, Joyce, like, I could see if she hadn't heard anything and just heard the doorbell, like, that would have been fine. But having all the creepiness going on and then she opens the door was a little bit strange.
Does Darla spy on the gang a lot? because she seems to know a lot about specifically what Buffy's studying, even. Do we see her, like, peering at the window?
Yes, you literally saw her spying on Buffy and
what a creep.
About the Civil War in the library, which is how she knew what to say to Joyce.
Oh, Darla really... She's an effective character because she really makes me hate her.
Darla, yeah, I hate her too. Anyway, Angel is a flop and therefore couldn't get out the word. He was probably so shocked that this girl that he, like, adores has seen him in his, like, don't look at me, I'm evil face. And, like, he was, like, totally lost for words because he's a flop.
And that's so Stephen Salvatore all over again, isn't it, Kristen? Like, I don't know, drink Elena's blood is kind of like, I'm assuming, a plot line that has to happen at least 20 times in that show. And it's, like, shocking to someone else that sees it. It gets kind of tired in that show. I'm hoping they don't do that too more often on this one.
Well, the scary vampire face being embarrassing to the vampire happens a few times, especially in that first season. So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That doesn't actually happen that much on Buffy. That's not a magic spell. Like, we now know Angel's a vampire. There's not really going to be much other good vampires. Like, it's sort of just him. Right. And so, and now Buffy knows, and it's sort of... Yeah, it's not too much of a, like, don't look at me, but, you know, I think it's considered like him it is.
Is he considered, like, the Freddy of the Scooby gang? Do they actually, like, designate everyone to each member of the actual Scooby cartoon?
No, they do not designate everyone, but when he works with the team, I do enjoy it.
Okay, because I'm just thinking, like, he's the pretty boy, I suppose.
I don't know. Anyway, moving on from that. At the Bronze showdown, you know, big fight, you know, between, you know, the guys figure out, basically from Joyce at the hospital, Giles, Willow, and Xander, they figure out that what actually happened, that Darla was the one, you know, because Joyce is very unhelpful. She's like, your friend came over, and then I fell and cut myself. And obviously that's the bit of miscommunication where Joyce doesn't say, oh, you know, your friend Darla, you know, so Buffy assumes Angel. And all of that, the gang discovers that it was Darla and not Angel, and they kind of put two and two together behind the scenes for Buffy. You know, they find out about Angelus, and they find out, you know, about Darla. And then there's the, you know, big final scene of everyone fighting together, and you know, Darla's got guns, which is, I think, the first time you kind of see guns come into the show, which is a bit weird, but they have a big fight, and then, yeah, I think that we get a little bit more information about what can damage a vampire, and obviously Angel gets to, you know, tell Buffy that he isn't a baddie. So how did everyone like this fight as a big sort of final moment? Oh, well, not final moment, but a big final fight, and I guess whether you liked it as an action scene or what it told you about the characters and anything like that. So what was everyone's favorite part of this ending showdown? Mitch, what did you like about it, or is there something you didn't like about it?
There's something I'm lukewarm about, and it's the fact that they're showing a vampire being shot by a gun and establishing a logic that I simply do not understand. I think that anything that is a humanoid that's shot in the head should die. The fact that she says simply, this cannot kill you, kind of torques me. If anything, I'm hoping that we're going to see kind of like in Heroes, you know how Claire's superpower is to always heal no matter what, but she can die when she gets kind of staked through the head or shot through the head. She can, if it's taken out, she'll come back to life. That's how I will appreciate the fact that, quote, bullets can't kill vampires. Other than that, I mean, I guess I can kind of get behind the whole heart thing. And then I made a note, too, that I'm just going to assume we're going to see, like, wooden bullets, because that just happens in every vampire show ever.
I don't think we ever see wooden bullets on Buffy, spoiler alert.
Really?
Yeah, I've never even heard of that, ever.
I thought that was, like, a major thing in vampire lore, just to create wooden bullets and call it a day.
I have never heard of that in my entire life. So, sorry if everyone was hanging out for wooden bullets. Not a thing on Buffy.
I was going to say, I think that's more of a modern vampire trope. Like, the older stories didn't have to go to the guns, they just stuck with stakes and whatnot, but modern times guns are used in every action movie, so in order to be able to use them against vampires, everyone always seems to have a way to make wooden bullets or wooden tipped bullets or something. So yeah, that might just be a more modern trope.
And also, we have, I assume, super healing, because I'm iffy on that. When Darla goes, it's no fun to dance without kneecaps, bam. And it's like, okay, but he won't die from this, so that's meant to mean he'll heal from even, like, a heart shot, I guess. Can anyone explain, Natalie, can you explain to me if we're meant to know how vampires heal yet? Because we kind of have that scratch on Angel too. And
not really. They get wounded. They can be severely injured. Like, they can be paralyzed injured, if you know what I mean. I won't tell you exactly how. You will see a vampire in a wheelchair later in the show. You can be severely injured. You can be, but there are killing situations. Cutting off a head does it. I think she's already said stake through the heart. Sunlight, probably enough holy water as well. Like if you dunked holy water would burn them. If you dunked them in a bath of it, they might burn all up. If you know what I mean. So
and I guess that they're not like newts. Like they won't grow back like a toe.
Maybe you can set them on fire, but I'm not sure.
Have we seen that? I think we've already seen. No, we've just seen sun, which is kind of like setting them on fire.
So, anyone else got any big feelings, either yay or nay, about this final scene, the fight scene, Christian?
Just more good fun with Buffy, like flipping off of things, and it reminds me of like Derek Hale, like doing all of these ridiculous flips as he runs around Beacon Hills on Teen Wolf. So, yeah, just. Good fun.
And Brittany?
This show so far has been the opposite of Avatar, where I don't care so much for the action scenes because it's like I mentioned earlier, it's like watching like a bad Power Rangers fight. So the less action for me, the better. Unless, like I'll talk about in the next episode, it's just Buffy beating up Giles, because I'm fine with that.
At this point, I definitely agree with you. I'm definitely more interested in the character stuff than the action. Was there any particular information that was revealed in this scene that you were kind of like, oh, about at all?
No, I think Mitch kind of actually covered my thoughts exactly. Like when I saw it in the doc, I was like, oh yeah, I wanted to know about, you know, like it's again, this is a good episode for the world building. So, you know, like what can and cannot kill a vampire, what vampires can and cannot like heal from, like they can be injured. It's not like, you know, you get like hit by a truck and there are no consequences. Like you get hit by a truck, you're going to be pretty sore for like the next few days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that it did again, like it did earlier in the episode with like, you know, them revealing that like Angel has blood in his fridge and stuff like that. Like it fed into building. This is like a really good world building episode as well as an eye candy. Let's just look at Angel for 22 minutes episode. 22 longer than that, 40, whatever
these
episodes are.
This is kind of a funny question, and this is totally not meant to be like Guns in America conversation. Why didn't Darla get like an AK-47? Why does she just have these two little handguns? If she really wants to do this right, why wouldn't she get like an assault rifle or something?
It's not very
subtle.
It feels
like kind of like...
Yeah, like you can just like walk into the Bronze with an AK-47.
Well, apparently you can walk into the Bronze and trash the whole place because they have no night guard. So I guess that's a thing.
Well, weren't they?
I don't know.
No, maybe that's the next episode that they're going to be closed for fumigation or whatever it is.
Because what I understand the vampires in this series as are beings that are able to have basically unlimited knowledge and resource, especially money, because they have all the time in the world to earn it in the stock market and to read books. And I think that makes me find everything that is, I guess, underdone in the world of these vampires kind of silly. I always expect them to be more elegant, but they're kind of just hanging out down in like a cave, and that's their thing. They like that because there's no sunlight, and that's it. I want them to be like a bit more ostentatious. And yes, I am kind of referencing Twilight because I think they did that part right. It makes sense that they want to be like doctors and whatever else in that series. And here, it just feels like they have no inhibition other than sucking blood, and that's it.
You're going to get more complex with the vampires as we go on. I promise you. Like, there's going to be more of that. But at the moment, they're pretty basic. So, just obviously, she then gets staked by, I think it's Angel who actually does it in, you know, behind her. So she's staked now. And I can promise you that if we stick with Buffy and if we stick with Angel, there's going to be a bit more about her history with Angel later on.
Interesting.
This show really, there's a lot of, like, supplementary material, like a lot of, like, you know, backstory for all of the past Slayers and stuff like that. So there is a lot of history in this world. I won't get too detailed about it, but, you know, they've been hanging out for, like, few hundred years. You know, Darla's even older than Angel, a fair bit older than Angel. And so it's not like that never comes up again, basically, is what I'll say. And then, yeah, but she's dead for now. She's gone. We're not actually going to see her. Well, maybe we will. I don't know. But, yeah, she's out of the way. And then, obviously, it's understood that Angel's set up. You know, she set Angel up. And then, you know, Buffy and Angel kind of go and they dance and kiss and stuff at the Bronze. And they're like, we can't be together because it's too hard because you're old and weird and I'm obsessed with you, but it's weird that I'm obsessed with you and stuff like that. So how do you guys feel about, like, the potential of Buffy and Angel as a relationship? Like, do you think that age gap is gross and weird, like, no matter what, like, no matter how emotionally stunted he is? Or do you, like, want them to get it together, those crazy kids? You know, do you feel like that he has the wisdom of a 240-year-old guy, or is he just a flop with no game? I don't know. Brittany, how are you feeling about the shipping?
I really don't know. I like Angel at this point, and I think that he's a good, like, you know, oh, there's this bad guy who she, like, not that he's a bad guy, but, like, he's the bad boy versus, like, you know, the guy with the puppy dog eyes. And then, so you have that whole dynamic. Yeah. But I don't know. I like Xander, but I like Xander being jealous. But I also just don't care about Angel that much right now. Because, like you were saying, he's kind of just, like, he's been around for that long. Like, he has, in, I'm just guessing, probably seen another Slayer before. So, like, you know, he's, I don't know what he's doing with his, like, you know, all this time that he has on his hands, because he's clearly not picking up a book or studying or, you know, learning anything from his past experiences. So he's kind of frustrating right now, but he's good to look at.
How about you, Kristen?
I mean, it's fine. I think it like in this episode, it develops a lot of conflict for Buffy, like her trying to decide whether or not Angel is beyond just a good bet for her romantically at all. Like, she also has to deal with the fact that he's a vampire and she's a Slayer, and it's kind of in her blood to want to kill vampires. So it's, you know, there's some interesting conflict there that will be, I'm sure, addressed, you know, throughout the rest of the series. But the age thing, meh. At this point, we've seen enough, like, 200-year-old vampires. Like, it would be creepy if he went and hit on old ladies. Like,
why would that be creepy?
Sort of strange. It would be strange. Like
if he's only had a soul for 80 years, right? So say he's, like, in his current mind about, you know, 80 or whatever, or 100 plus the, you know, age he lived as a human. Why wouldn't he go seek out some, like, 80-year-old lady who has, like, you know, the same life experience and stuff like that? Like, you know, Steve Rogers does it. Why not Angel?
Yeah, but, like, Steve had an attachment to her before she was 80. Anyway, no, I mean, I would think that it would just be strange that those older people will have grown up, you know, in a time that he didn't, at least if he's around people that are somewhere near his age, like he understands them because he's never aged. He doesn't know what it's like to become an old person. Like,
yeah,
he's been alive all of this time, but
still physically, he's been, like, living as a 20-year-old, like, doing the things 20-year-olds do for 200 years or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I don't know if he'd have as much in common with people who are 80 years old and are ugly and have had to deal with all of that. So, you know, it just, for me, doesn't bother me, the age thing. It just is a vampire thing.
Fair enough.
You know, I have issues with the fact that we're saying Darla doesn't have a soul, Angel does. They loved each other. Where is the logic in having a soul and being able to love each other, or not having a soul and being able to love each other? I don't get what
you're gonna find out.
Oh, okay. So it's not just like a continuity error. Got it.
It is not a continuity error. A humongous part of the point of this entire show, and something that is showcased deeply through a couple of other characters that you haven't met yet, is the lines of good and bad, of personality in a demon, if being a demon just makes you evil, flat out, if you know what I mean, or if there is more to it than that. That is a major, major part of the show. But yes.
Well, I can appreciate that. Then that's a good struggle to look at, because I find many series that try and set up apathetic villains fall short for me, because I'm like, then what's your motivation? Why do you care to do the things you do? But now I get it.
And Darla and Angel were in love before he had the soul. Like, they weren't together after he had the soul. But a vampire...
I kind of got that impression.
I'll tell you, a vampire has not only the... It has every single aspect of the human that it was, except for a moral compass about killing stuff. Like, it doesn't really feel that bad about doing stuff. They have extremely huge personal attachments. They definitely fall in love. Like, they are a complete... They don't need the soul to be in love. The soul just makes them have remorse about their need to kill things, basically. That's it.
Right. And I'm assuming we're probably going to have to go into the underworld, the afterlife, whatever we're going to call it in this series, at least once, just because of the fact that we're talking about souls so much in this episode. I think the two other newbies with me can agree that it just feels like a good setup to say, like, I don't know, what if we had to go reclaim someone's soul that's in the Scooby gang or something? I can get behind that. I think that would be fun, like a good way of making them like a good vampire or something, unlike Jesse, which they were just like, just kill him.
Yeah, see, that's, you know, they can't go around going and reclaiming everyone's souls willy-nilly, but you're making some points that I promise you is part of the overarching story of the entire show, is like the Scooby gang's interpretation of what it is to be, you know, a demon versus human, evil, you know, whether, you know, what having the soul really means and all of that. It will come, I promise you, just hold on. But they can definitely be in love, and it's definitely, like, real. It's not like... I feel like what Giles says about, like, that, oh, you're not looking at your friend anymore, you're looking at the person that killed him. It's a pretty true interpretation, but it's also... The humans are pretty harsh on vampires about their emotions, if you know what I mean. Yes, vampires are out there ruthlessly killing and stuff, and a lot of them are very basic, especially when they haven't been a vampire for very long. They're kind of just in that base element of, like, I want to kill stuff and I'm a vampire. Once they've been a vampire for a while, they develop just as much as a personality as a human, like, does. It's and it, you know, sometimes it is based on who they were before, or sometimes it's like a brand new person from scratch, but they have a huge emotional range. They're not just, like, mindless. So,
and I answered my own question too in my mind. I was just thinking, I wonder who or what will get the souls back that I know are being set up in this plot arc for whoever in Scooby Gang is inevitably going to become a vampire. Just going to happen. And it's not a spoiler. I know anyone if it's right. So don't get upset at me if I guessed correct. This is literally just me reading the story. And I thought about it for a second, and I was just like, oh, wait, the Romani used like a curse to get the soul back. We have Giles doing all this magic, and apparently that's going to come up later. I don't know. I've been told by some super fan on the show that that's a thing, and I guess that is all going to come together to make him like the soul reclaimer in my mind. That's what I can see Giles' role.
Oh my god, make sure you're getting a bit ahead of yourself, but okay. Let's go into favorite scenes and quotes before doing the next episode, because we've got a bit to get through before in the next half an hour. So my favorite scene was the Buffy and Angel sleepover, mainly because it was just awkward, and Angel is a flop and I love him, and I can't believe that he was either... I can't work out if back in the 90s he was genuinely painted as this, like, brooding, I'm so cool, like, you know, way, because when all I see is, like, awkwardness, or if that was just kind of how 14-year-old girls interpret him, whereas the adults writing him knew that it was, like, floppy awkwardness, if you know what I mean. Either way, I love it now. So, yeah. Brittany?
Mine is watching Giles get beat up with a stick. Because,
what, like... Do you hate him, or do you just think it's funny?
No, I just think it's funny. I think Giles is actually my favorite character. So, it is just humorous, because he puts on, like, all this padding and stuff. It was great.
Yeah. I actually really liked, you know, that training montage. Because, you see, again, it's a little bit of world building. It's like... This is what the Watcher does. You know, he gives, you know, new training regimes to the Slayer. He gets, like, this is basically what he does, like, as his job as the Watcher. He trains her, and he finds, you know, different ways. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to help you solve your problems. He's meant to train her with weapons, and he's meant to give her new information and all of that. And so this is sort of the start of that. Okay, Mitch?
See, I went superficial, and I just said Angel's tattoo reveal. I'm not sure what the tattoo was meant to be. I was a bit distracted.
It was a bird. It's not that relevant to the story.
I thought it was like, because I could have sworn there was another conversation, too, later on in the episode where Giles was like, that's the mark of a vampire if they have a bird tattoo. Look it for on every single one if you ever don't know.
No, you've definitely made that up. And
wouldn't that be convenient?
Kristen?
for me, it was the last scene. I mean, it's a little overdramatic, yes, but like him and like Angel and Buffy like make out, and then like she steps back and says like it hurts, and they zoom out, and the camera shows that he's got like the red imprint of the cross that she had on, like burnt into him.
Yes.
And it's just very swoony for me. Like, you know, he knows that it's gonna hurt. He knows exactly what's gonna happen, and he still like can't bring himself away from her, and that's just really
cute. It is so Angel to permanently like disfigure himself with a cross burn to show his extreme love for Buffy. It just, I already see what flop Natalie's talking about, and it just, I love it too.
Yeah I do. I'm really into them way more than I've ever been into Angel before. I keep saying this, but my interpretation of him this time is totally different to how it's ever been before, and I'm really enjoying that. So, favorite quotes. Mine was actually to do with Darla and Angel, and it's kind of a good juxtaposition, I think, of Buffy. It's when Darla, you know, they're at the Bronze, and Darla kind of admits, she said, "Do you know what the saddest thing in the world is?" And Buffy says, "Bad hair on top of that outfit." And Darla says, "To love someone who used to love you." And I think it's a really good sort of juxtaposition of the ridiculousness of Buffy with Buffy's quip and the actual emotional depths that this show has the possibility to go to. It's not quite going to them at the moment, but like there's some freaking nightmare status, night ruiner emotional stuff that will happen in this show. So get ready for that.
Yeah, so my favorite line was, "You're in love with a vampire? What, are you out of your mind?" Just because it was so dramatic and hilarious at the same time.
And Mitch?
All right, so my favorite line is a simple one. It's Darla's, "Angel?" And it just, it gives me feels for someone I never thought I was going to have, Darla.
But when
and
she now dies. I'm just
backstory. Yeah, when she's dying.
Yeah, fair enough. And Kristen?
Mine is from when Buffy, like at the beginning of the episode, was like poking through Giles' like weapons closet. And she says, "Cool, crossbow. Huh, check out these babies. Goodbye stakes, hello flying fatality."
Good times, Buffy. Good times. She's a cutie. All right. So we're going to go into episode 8, which is I, Robot, You, Jane, in which Joss Whedon gets his inspiration for Age of Ultron, basically. No, that's a lie. I'm not allowed to slag too much off about Joss and Marvel while doing this podcast, and Ultron definitely was a concept that already existed in the Marvel comics, but a lot of how he, you know, put together the Moloch robot and the delivery of the lines and everything about him was so similar to Ultron that I was just like, wow. Anyway, in this episode, Willow is the Jane to Moloch the Corruptor's robot. Back in the day, all Moloch wanted was love, aka snapping the necks of everyone that pledged their devotion to him. Don't know what that's about. Anywho, he's sealed away in a book by some magicians, they're monks, and will only be released from it if someone reads it, and they like lock it in a box. Present day, Willow digitally scans the book, allowing Moloch to enter the digital world. She then starts talking to a catfishing Moloch posing as a Malcolm. Malcolm uses two computer science students as his slave, eventually killing both. Meanwhile, Ms. Callender, a techno-pagan, joins the Scooby Gang as Giles' better half. She helps Giles with a spell that gets Moloch off of the internet, but that's not enough to stop the Green Demon. Buffy and Xander arrive at a technical plant just in time to save Willow from Moloch's robot suit, leaving the three to realize that they'll never be able to participate in healthy relationships. Okay, so Moloch the Corruptor's introduction was melodramatic to say the least. We've got a flashback to, however, you know, 1400s monks with a sexy twink monk boy, you know, pledging his love to Moloch and then getting his neck snapped. So
it's a very astute description of him. Yes,
look, it's true. So I don't.
It felt very homoerotic. Like,
oh yeah, it did. And yeah, so we meet that big demon, and basically he's been, you know, trapped, destroyed by the monks, and put in this book for a million years. And basically, I don't know. This is very much a Monster of the Week episode. You're asking, what is Moloch's purpose? Does he just enjoy chaos and sporadic sacrificial death, or does he collect souls for a higher being or something? No, I don't know. Like, there is no answer to that question, like, at least at the moment. It's just, it just goes towards showing you, it, like we said in the last episode, it's just world building. There are thousands of demons in all of history, and they just do their demon stuff. They're not all working towards a higher goal. They just are. So I don't know.
Like, why the say you love me thing? Is it just like daddy issues? I don't know.
I don't know. He's a corruptor. He's turning hot monk twinks, you know, to a life of demon sodomy. You know, he's corrupting the youth. I don't know.
Ooh, that's good.
Anyway, I mean, how do you guys feel about that concept? Not about the monk twink, but about, like, just that there are demons and that they just do their demon stuff and that it's not plot-driven, if you know what I mean. It's not a part of an arc. It's just they're going to come across different demons over and over again that are all just making nuisance of themselves because they're demons.
No, I think it's fine, mainly because I enjoy the structure. As I said a few episodes ago, I enjoy the structure of, like, a monster of the week type of thing. And, like, yeah, you're not going to know every – it's already presented that there's going to be so many of these different monsters that there's, it's just not possible to go into the history of every single one. But they will give you these little, like, teasers at the beginning to be like, okay, this is the world we're existing in right now, because that then informs, like, why Giles is looking for certain things or why Buffy needs to consult certain, like, you know, different tactics to approach this problem, you know. So I think it's it, and then it, like, sets up how Willow's going to be involved, and I think that that's fine. I actually enjoy, I mean, besides, like, the weird robot thing at the end, I kind of enjoyed this episode.
And Kristen, do you have any thoughts about this as someone who probably has experienced this kind of monster of the week nonsense quite a lot?
Yeah, it doesn't really bother me. I assume that demons don't necessarily need a higher purpose. They just want to cause chaos and mayhem and be horrible and kill people. Like, it's just their thing. So yeah, it didn't bug me at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, he just wants sexy slaves, you know? Like, you know, he's definitely obviously corrupting Willow in, like, a romantic way. Like, there's he definitely wants some lovin', I think. So I don't know why.
He downgrades to, like, the chocolate cake kid from Matilda really soon, so.
What? That's not actually that actor, is it?
No, he just reminded me of him.
Okay,
a little bit.
All right.
That'd be great if it was, though.
So in the present day, basically, they're – you know, Willow, my biggest thing is, like, how the hell, why do they have this box? Does Giles just, like, order, like, every ancient text he ever sees in a catalog or something? Because, like, it's like, oh, scary box, you know, scary box, we've x-rayed it and there's a book inside it. Who'd like to buy this? And Giles is like, me! But...
Like, I could see Giles spending hours on eBay, like, just seeing old things and, like, ooh, there's an old box. There's got to be stuff in there. I mean, I'll buy that too.
You know,
like,
he probably does it by the back of a newspaper because he won't go on the eBay, as we learn in this episode.
Was this not Karen's job just a little bit ago?
Yeah, kind of.
Like, to sell old things and buy old things online. She's a Giles. Oh, that's cute.
Oh, she'll like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, me
anyway.
Too.
In the present day, we have, like, oh, there's computers in the school. People go to computer class. Giles is very troubled by this. Oh, no. And Willow, you know, starts to get very preoccupied with talking to someone she's met online, and stays up all night talking to him, and his name is Malcolm, and Buffy has the usual, like, attitude of the 90s of, oh, you're talking to someone on the internet. That's weird. And so my biggest concern about this entire episode, or my biggest thoughts about this entire episode, is, like, just the way that the internet was interpreted then, because there's so many elements about it that are, like, ridiculous. Because, yes, back then the internet was a super shaky source of information, but, like, did this guy just directly email her? It's not like meeting someone, like, on a forum or, like, in a chat room and you're like, oh, you're both here by coincidence, and then you get talking. Like, if someone just, like, messages you directly out of the blue, you're like, how the fuck did you get, like, in touch with me? But Willow apparently is not bothered by this, and I don't know. The internet back then was a nightmare, so...
Well, maybe she, like, maybe she's... I remember I used to go on, like, AOL and, like, purposefully, like, press message a random person or whatever messengers you could do, and then you just have a conversation for
a day. Yeah, she found him on Omegle. I used to do that on ICQ. Anyone here have ICQ?
No, but I remember Omegle, and it was such... Yeah. Oh, God.
Omegle's not even that old. ICQ is, like, at least 15 years ago, and it was...
There was, like, an older version, too. It was called something B. I don't remember, the instant messenger.
Oh, anyway, I don't know. It's a very good portrait of a certain era of internet use with, the nerds who know what, you know why it's good. And then, you know, the people who are, like, creeped out by it, possibly rightfully so, and stuff like that. So did any of you have any interesting early internet experiences in your, I guess, early teenhood or anything like that?
Oh, Natalie, I could go on forever. You already
know that. Don't want to know, do I, Mitch?
My first internet boyfriend was my first boyfriend.
Oh no.
It was a fact of the matter. Like, I was a willow because he literally messaged me on MySpace one day. Within that day, we had said, I love you, and we were dating. I never met the man in real life. It was like a week, and then we had an internet breakup. It was a thing. Fuck.
Excellent. Aww. That's great. Fantastic. God, the internet is embarrassing. So it's interesting because an episode like this couldn't exist now because we use the internet so differently. Like, yes, people can still be anonymous, and obviously, yes, catfishing is still a thing, but, like, people trust internet connections a lot more, you know, or the communities that they move in, they kind of know how to check if someone's legit, and the people who want to remain anonymous, like on Tumblr and stuff, they're like, yeah, I don't talk about my real identity. They're honestly quite open with that. Twitter and stuff is obviously usually quite a personal, like, you know, Twitter and Facebook, you kind of know who those people are in real life. And so, I don't know, it's just a really hilarious moment in time that this is the way the internet used to be. So, yeah, I don't know, did anyone have any thoughts about this concept in general? Like, was it a bit too dated, or did you enjoy it, or what?
When we first saw the book and the box, and so I hope someone doesn't read this, I initially assumed that someone was just going to read it.
Mm.
I thought it was a nice little twist that the computer read it and that he ended up in the computer. So for me, it was a departure from what I originally expected this episode to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, you know, the internet stuff was just kind of funny because we're in the age where now you can't go a day without touching the internet. So it was just good fun. But yeah. Yeah, I originally expected somebody to read that book and end up, you know, in a whole lot of trouble.
Well, essentially, it starts to feel like Chamber of Secrets, like, point for point, red-haired teen, poor soul into demon, demon gains power and tries to, like, kill her, I guess. So it felt kind of tired to me in that point, but I think Buffy came before Chamber, I have to say. No, that's wrong. No, is it?
This season of Buffy was before Chamber. They're not related. It's just a vague coincidence.
It'd be weird if they were, like, somewhat related. I'd be like, wow, JK, that's interesting. But I saw that immediately. It was funny because I was like, oh, that's just kind of specific.
I don't know. And then, Brittany, did you have any thoughts about, you know, ye olde internet?
Nothing except for, like, I liked it. It still felt relevant. So that was kind of interesting, except for, like, when Xander had to ask all his clarifying questions, and he was like, so you're saying that, like, this guy's living in the computer, and then, like, Giles is like, yeah, he is, like, then when they scanned him, like, he came out, and then Buffy was just like, every computer is connected by modems, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, this episode could still be done now with a few very small tweaks. Mm-hmm. People would get it easily, so that'd have to be a bit more of a twist, because people would understand much more easily. You wouldn't have had to, like, explain the fact, like, of how the internet works to people, you know, like, you would the concept of this, like, oh, you know, thing that's meant to be read is actually scanned into the computer, does some stuff, catfishes someone, all could happen now. It's just the elements of, like, what is the net is still, like, hilarious to me. But I really love Jenny's introduction, Miss Calendar, Jenny Calendar, that's her name. Her introduction is really great because a lot of what she said was like, because you had that weird creepy boy being like, if you're not wired in, you're not alive. And I'm like, oh, that's rough. But her interpretation of it all I really loved. So we'll get to that in a second, because we have obviously those two boys who are, I guess, in the power of Moloch as well. Like, I guess they were the ones who were, like, building his body, or I don't know. They were there. They were doing stuff for him while he was trying to, you know, get Willow. And so was he having, like, romantic affairs with them as well? Or, like, I'm still a little bit uncertain about why he was drawing in Willow as well. Like, because she obviously wasn't a part of his big plan. Like, she was still thought he was just Malcolm. So did anyone sort of pick up why he was actually trying to attract Willow? Is it just because he wanted love?
Yeah, I think Giles, when he's explaining, like, what the demons are, like, they prey on impressionable minds, he said. Mm-hmm. So I think that, well, Willow obviously has an impressionable mind, and he, like, you know, they can use, like, their promises of, like, love and, like, companionship and, you know, stuff like that in order to, like, win her over. And she was just an easy target. So I think it was just, like, you know, she was fair game at that point.
Yeah.
And so Buffy kind of starts suspecting the two slave boys, as we're going to call them, and one of them nearly kills her, Fritz, the big angry one, and then she's saved by the other one, Dave, the little skinny one. And as a result of this, his punishment is to have his own suicide faked, like they kill him and pretend it's suicide and write a note from him in the computer and then stick it to his own chest. Like, if I was going to hang myself, I probably wouldn't, like, pin a note to myself. Like, imagine looking down and be, oh, yeah, my note's there. I guess I'm going to die now. Anyway, that's nasty. But, yeah, people just still go to this school, and that's fine after, like, the amount of students that are, like, found dead. So, yeah, that's a thing. Is anyone finding it hard to believe that in this circumstance? I mean, this happens in every horror show. Teen Wolf, you know, how many people have died at Beacon Hills High and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's hard to kind of realistically believe, but in the world of the show, you're supposed to kind of suspend that and just, you know, it happens, it's stuff they deal with, and they keep moving on.
And I will say as well, it's not totally ignored. It's like, there's definitely going to be a moment or moments where you're like, oh, God, I'm glad that they addressed that instead of just, like, keeping continuing to just be like, yeah, this is what happens. So
is there going
to
be, like, an in-memorandum episode where we see all of these side characters that have been killed come back and talk to Buffy in, like, an afterlife?
You'll see.
Like, Buffy, I didn't commit suicide. Playboy number one did it for me.
I mean, I think she knows that. I think they know that. Because Buffy comes in, she's like, it looked like suicide, but we don't think it was. So they already got that, but yeah.
She should be a crime scene investigator, shouldn't she?
Let's talk about Miss Callender, because I love her. So she's there, and she's, like, constantly bickering with Giles throughout the entire episode because, you know, he's teaching these computers. She's putting a computer in his library. Oh, no. And he keeps being all, oh, this is a demon box and all of that kind of stuff. And she's kind of like, get over yourself. This is dumb. And, like, you know, and then she kind of ends up flipping it all on his head because he assumes that, you know, because she loves this computer science stuff, that she's completely unappreciative of, like, all of, you know, history and old things and, you know, completely in a different world. And she's like, you know what? Screw you. I know more about all of this stuff than you do. I know about the new stuff and the old stuff, and I am so much better than you. I mean, she doesn't say I'm so much better than you, and I love Giles, but I really love her characterization in this whole episode, her attitude towards the internet, which I think is very valid and very truthful. Like, I think what she had to say about it was really a good interpretation of what's actually ended up happening in, like, a, you know, a less melodramatic way than Fritz and his, if you're not wired, you're not alive. So I love her, but how did you guys like her? Brittany, what did you think?
She was fine. I really enjoy watching someone besides Buffy push Giles' buttons and watching him get frustrated and stuff. And I liked her character a lot. I hope, does she stick around? I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but I hope she does.
There'll be more of her.
Okay.
I just knew from this I mean, I sincerely don't remember too much more past this, because after this episode is the puppet episode, and I lost all interest in Buffy.
Okay,
seriously,
don't scare them about the puppet episode. Just carry.
They should be scared. Anyways, I kind of just got from her introduction, period, that was like an introduction to a main character. It just felt like it to me. And I don't even know, I haven't seen any fanon of her or canon of her later on, gifts, ships, anything. I just kind of understood that if Giles is getting a love interest, it's important, and that's why we should care about her.
Kristen, how do you feel about her? Have you watched Charmed? I know Karen loves Charmed. She looks a bit like she should be on Charmed.
She's missing the cameo, but yeah.
I was going to say, I've seen a little bit of Charmed, and I can definitely see her, like, fitting in with them. As far as Miss Callender goes, I was really annoyed with her at the beginning. Like, she just seemed kind of dumb. But the second that Giles was, like, you know, starting to talk to her about how he had something that was going to be really hard to understand, and she just kind of looks at him and goes, oh, I totally get it. I'm a techno-pig, and I totally understand. Like, from that moment on, I really, really liked her. Just, I don't know why, like, all of the annoyance I had from the beginning of the episode just disappeared. And I was just, you know, enamored with her. So I really do hope she appears again. It sounds like she will in some way, shape, or form. And, yeah, I also, like Brittany said, I love that she kind of pushes Giles' buttons and they kind of play off each other really well. So that was all really fun to watch.
And then Mitch has asked, you know, her admitting that she doesn't have magical powers seemed to lead to the point of that the magic Giles does is special. Not quite. they both have the power to cast these rituals like they do together. You know, being a witch, like he asks her if she's a witch. Being a witch, you do have to like have more of a connection to the power that you can do. But in this universe, like anyone can start doing witchcraft and start doing spells, if you know what I mean. It's just some people are innately, once they start doing it, more tapped into like the power of the universe and are able to do more. And some people are just like, oh, well, I can do the stuff. They can cook from a recipe, but they can't like, you know, their cakes don't turn out quite as nice as other people's, if you know what I mean. Anyone can kind of do it. And like Giles has obviously done it before and he, you know, he's doing it there and she's helping him. That's kind of what that means. Basically, it's just the sign that there are witches who can do, you know, completely really big deal things like the Amy episode, you know, with the cheerleaders. And that's because that person, you know, when they started practicing witchcraft just innately had more power. But it doesn't mean the people that don't have more power can't just do the rituals as well, because they can. So that's kind of how that works. So Moloch is existing in a robot form, you know, which is, as I said, so Ultron. Like, even the delivery of the way he speaks. Like, Kristen, did you think about that at all while watching it?
Honestly, no. But it just wasn't anything that, like, appeared in my brain. But I can see how if you have seen the series before and aren't just, like, following the episode, that the parallels are definitely there. Like, the minute you mentioned it earlier, I was like, oh, duh, yeah, of course. Like,
and
yeah, so
here's as well, I wasn't even connecting it with Joss. I was like, oh, my God, this is so Age of Ultron. And then I'm like, oh, he did Age of Ultron, and he did, oh, I was like, once I realized that it was like both Joss, I was kind of like, about it. But yeah, I was thinking about it as Ultron even before I made the connection that Joss had created both. So yeah, I don't know. It was just, you know, not just the fact of, oh, an artificial intelligence has made itself a robot body. Like, that's not news, but the delivery, the way it looked and the delivery of its speech and the way it kind of spoke about the world was so reminiscent to me that I don't know how long the Age of Ultron story has existed in the comics, if you know what I mean. Like, because I'm going to look this up, because Joss, obviously, he did the sequel. I don't know if it was him or if it was, like, the head of Marvel. It was like, okay, so what we want to do for Avengers sequel is the Ultron story from the comics. And I have no idea if that was his choice or not. But what if the Ultron story, you know, happened, you know, way back, and he was like, I always loved that. I'm going to do an episode like that for my TV show. And then when they were like, we want an Avengers sequel, he's like, I'm going to do that thing that I always liked. But anyway, the dates might not line up, but I'm going to go look it up later. So let's move on from that. They fight, they fry the robot demon. It's all, everything's fine. And then they kind of have this big realization conversation. You know, Willow's very ashamed of herself. She's very upset that she fell for this and all of that kind of stuff. And then Buffy and Xander both point out their recent failures in terms of supernatural relationships as well. So, yeah, how did you guys like that kind of their little humorous assessment of how much their lives suck?
It was cute. It started to feel like Scream, not the TV series, but more of like the movie series. A lot of Buffy starts to feel like Scream when I think about it.
I have not seen any of that, so I don't know. I know one of you guys mentioned this is your favorite moment from the show, so let's move on to that maybe, because we need to get through this quickly before you guys have to leave. So, yeah, favorite scenes in this episode. Mine was pretty much all of the Jenny stuff, like every time she was talking sensibly about the internet, but especially when she kind of metaphorically, you know, smacked Giles on the forehead and was like, hello, you don't know as much as you think you know. And I quite like Giles' explanation at the end of, like, his tangible history stuff as well. So I love all of their interactions. So, Brittany, what was your favorite moment?
Mine was when, like, Giles wasn't using enough power to, like, you know, summon the demon back, like, as the commander or whatever. And he was just, like, screaming by the end. And I just, I like when he has to do magical spell things.
Cool. Well, I think that's going to pay off for you then. Mitch, what was your favorite scene of the episode?
Mine was the first slave boy saving Buffy, rip, and I liked that really tubular laptop.
Oh, when he was like, I didn't say that Nazi Germany.
No, my report. He was like, this isn't my report on George Washington.
Yeah. That was intense.
It's funny, though, because like, I simply cannot tell the difference between some of these 90s boys. Their hair is just so, like, I don't know how to call it. It's not coiffed. It's like whipped up. It's just really strange, the bangs. And they all look alike. Like, all white boys in the 90s really just looked a lot alike to me. They really did.
Oh, I loved Jenny, by the way, being like, you think that, like, you know, information is, like, this sacred thing that only white men are allowed to access. And I was like, wow. That sounds like Tumblr 2016 up in here, but I did really like it.
Someone needs to gift that. It'll have so many reblogs these days. People will be like, Buffy had it right all along.
I'd kind of forgotten that she got that sort of specific and critical, and I kind of liked it. But Kristen, your favorite scene?
Mine was the last scene. Just the way that Xander says, "We're doomed," was just genius. And yeah, I love how they like were there for Willow, like to make her feel a little more normal. Like, both of us have screwed up royally, so don't worry about it. It was a nice, cute little Scooby Gang moment.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, favorite quotes quickly. My actual favorite quote was when, you know, Jazz like the idiot box and Calendar was like, "That's TV. The idiot box is TV. This is the good box," to the computer, because, I mean, I think the computer is a very good box as well. So I just love that. But I wanted to give a shout out to the bit where Xander and Buffy are talking about catfishing, and he says, "But also, you know, I can say that I'm me. I could also say that I'm an elderly Dutch woman. You know, who's to say I'm not if I'm in an elderly Dutch chat room?" Reason I'm bringing that up is because literally throughout my entire teenagerhood, whenever I would be talking about, like, faking stuff on the internet, I would always say elderly Dutch woman. I think I'd forgotten that it was from this, but I definitely – that was, like, my turn of phrase for talking about, like, anonymity, which is a word I can never say, on the internet. So, yeah, quotes from you guys. Brittany?
Mine was after Xander punches – like, the guy's just like, "Hey, I got to hit someone," and he's all proud of himself because he took part in the fight.
Yeah. I did really like Xander in this episode, though, where he had the information about the hiring plant as well. Like, he had a little bit less, like, annoyance. So he was jealous of Willow in a kind of irrational way as well. He needs to get his head together. But he had a little bit more of, like, "I'm actually contributing and not, like, being a little shit about it." So I kind of liked that. Mitch?
Mine's a line that Willow says that reminds me a lot of her character from How I Met Your Mother, named Lily. It's an exchange in the beginning of the episode where Willow says, "Xander, you want to stay and help me?" "Xander, are you kidding me?" "Willow, yes, it was a joke that I made up."
Yeah.
And it's so, I mean, maybe it's just the actress that, I mean, Allison Hannigan just has, like, this really specific style of speaking that I think it's adorable.
Mm, yeah, that I have remembered that joke for quite a long time. And then Kristen?
Mine's from Miss Calendar. She says, "You here again? You kids really dig the library, don't ya?" And then Buffy replies, "We're literary." And Xander says, "To read makes our speaking English good."
Yeah.
I just about died. I was like, that's fabulous.
Yeah. I quite liked quite a lot of the dialogue in this episode. So contact info, if you want to reach us again after this episode. I think that we are done here basically with these two episodes. And next week we'll have some more episodes coming for you. And we'll be nearly finished season one of Buffy, because it's only a short season, 12 episodes. And then every other season is going to be 22 or 24 or whatever it is. So we haven't even got into the real hard slog yet. Email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperball.com, or you can join us over on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So if you leave us an iTunes review, that's really great as well. If you leave us a 5-star review, then Natalie, that's me, will teach you her mysterious techno-pagan hacker ways. Yeah, I can teach you all about how to say things to Mark Hamill that makes him favorite your tweet, because he just did it again during this conversation, just so you all know. We've got a few bits of feedback here. We've got a few tweets, and we've got an email and a hyperbole comment. Email from Christine about the show Angel. "I'm wondering if the Buffy watch is going to include Angel or not. If it hasn't been decided, I would encourage it, because the two shows play off each other so well and there's foreshadowing in each other. Thanks, Christine." This is a big issue that we have ongoing. If we include, because basically, for those who don't know, there is a show with Angel called Angel. It's a spinoff. It begins after season 3 of Buffy ends. So it runs in concurrent with season 4 of Buffy, and then onwards past, season, the rest of Buffy. it would mean the way it was originally aired was literally Buffy would air at 8 p.m., Angel would air at 9 p.m. The episodes, some of them cross over. There's a lot of stuff between the two of them. Buffy can totally stand alone, but to do Angel, you have to do it in order with Buffy. Whether we're going to do this or not is something that is not decided, and it's been massively debated. So if you have any thoughts about this, please get in touch and tell us what you would like us to do, because we are definitely considering different options, and part of how we're going to be deciding is seeing what the listeners want, if they actually want Angel to be incorporated or not, if they want Buffy in a block and us to do Angel all the way after. But the two shows did run in sync with each other for several years, so it's a very difficult situation. We definitely have people that are like far in one camp and far in the other in terms of the super fans and what we should do. So let us know your thoughts on that. Keep letting us know your thoughts on that, especially if you're a super fan. And even if you're a newbie, if you're curious about it, basically, it's definitely not something we even have to look at till we get to the end of season 3 of Buffy, though. So we've got a while to think about that. But if we did it, it would probably end up being each episode of Rewatchable would be a Buffy and an Angel, and then a Buffy and an Angel the next week, if you know what I mean. So it would take a lot slower to finish the entire series. I don't know how the newbies feel about that at that point, but that's what it would be. Mitch, do you want to do this Hyperball comment?
Sure. From Scully Summers, they said, "I'm so glad Mitch brought up Veronica Mars and iZombie when you guys were discussing Buffy's continuity. Buffy had a pretty big influence on those shows, and as it goes on, you'll start to see it find a very similar balance between them."
Okay. I haven't seen those shows, but I'm sure that's true. I'll do this first tweet, and then we'll do Kristen and Brittany. You do those last tweets, and then we'll go. So Joe Ludwigson, totally average Joe, confession, when I first read the Harry Potter books, in my head, Voldemort looked like the Master, pretty much same. Like very, for me, very similar imagery as well when I read Harry Potter. So I think that you're not alone in that, and obviously they are pretty canonically similar as well. Kristen.
Sure. This one comes from Emma at Luna Talib. She says, first TVD books, 1991 and 92, Stefan predates Angel. The parallels between Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the Vampire Diaries books are huge, much more than the show. I haven't read the books, and I don't think anybody that I know of at Hypeable has read the books, so I don't know about the Vampire Diaries book world and how it would relate to Buffy, but all I know is the show. So this is really interesting to learn that Stefan actually does predate Angel. I didn't realize that at all.
I didn't know there were the Vampire Diaries books, but okay.
Yeah, they're a huge book series, but they departed.
Oh no, maybe I did know that actually. Who's the author?
Oh, I can never remember her name. LJ Smith.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, anyway, let's carry on.
This tweet comes from Raven at lots_of_awesome. It says, watching Buffy again, things would have been so much easier with cell phones and those computers. Yikes. I would love, and I think I tweeted this from the Rewatchable account, I would love to see Angel's cryptic emoji texts to Buffy, like, not helping whatsoever.
Oh, I love him so much.
That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Good times. Yeah, agreed. All right, so that's us for this week. We're going to finish up now and say goodbye to you all. And, yeah, hopefully you're enjoying us. Let us know what you think. Let us know about the Buffy Angel issue that we just mentioned, because it is probably the biggest issue we're going to face with doing this podcast. But we will see you guys later. So until later, I'm Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.